This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Like a big deal. I mean, this show literally is going around the world this week. It's a very special edition. Man, the Brother Kite sounds better than ever. What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, and it's the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. That's your website, home, placetobenation.com. Plus, we'll find out, you know, however else you can download the show. It's apparently a big deal. Numbers are through the roof, and we can't thank you enough for being a part of it. Man, last week or last episode, we hit an all-time high. So that was great. And because we think it was, the reason why we think the numbers were so high, not only because of our guest Ray Rowe, but also because we were talking about Japan, we're going actually to Japan on this episode at great expense to Brad and the senior staff and management of Place to Be Nation. We're maxing out the company cards, and we are jetting over to Japan. JR, are you ready to go? You got your bag packed? You got your passport ready to be stamped?
Hell yeah. Set? I got my blade. I'm ready to bleed. Ready to go.
I don't know what any of that means. But anyway, we are going to be on... Wait. I'm reading this differently. Okay, so we're going to be talking to Christopher Daniels.
Oh, I thought we were going there on McGinn's private jet.
McGinn has a private jet?
No.
Well, that's good, because that would have made the trip very long without a private jet. Anyway, Christopher Daniels is going to be our guest. He is, he and his partner, Frankie Kazarian, they don't like me very much on Ring of Honor. Mm. But I have great respect for Daniels. And everything.
They're not alone not liking you on Ring of Honor.
Stop it. Everything that Daniels has accomplished in his 87-year career, we will encapsulate here on the show. He is in Japan right now. He and Kazarian, the addiction, they're competing in the World Tag League. And it works out to our benefit because they're 14 hours ahead. It's Tuesday morning, as we will talk to him as we record on Monday night. So he was gracious enough to give us some time, and we'll be talking with our pal, CD, here in just a bit.
So but, he already knows who wins the Monday Night Football game tonight?
You know, that's a great question. Mm. All right, is it too late? Maybe we can place bets on Raw. Because he could just go on. He could read the results.
Yeah,
call us back. We can place bets. You know, you can place bets on wrestling.
Yes.
I don't think we've ever talked about that here on this show. But to me, that's just crazy. But yeah, so we could find out who won. We can do all the spoilers for the Monday night TV shows.
You know, that'll put butts in the seats.
We can really be popular on social media. We can talk about whatever else is going on in the world. But we won't. We'll talk wrestling. And we'll have some fun with CD, who's a cool dude. And we'll find out what's going on in Japan. We'll find out all the scoop over there. And we'll talk about his Ring of Honor stints. We'll talk a little Ring of Honor Hall of Fame with him, because if a Ring of Honor Hall of Fame was built and we were accepting nominations, CD would be on my first ballot. So who else would, and who would he put? Because he would get a ballot. So who would be on his first ballot? That's the question I want to ask. But, there's other stuff going on in the world. First of all, let's go back a little bit. And how was your Thanksgiving?
Tasty. It was good. I am very tired, though. It was a long weekend. Ate a lot of turkey.
Yeah.
Watched a lot of Friar basketball. Had a very strong performance in the Wooden Classic. So I'm very excited there. Looking forward to the games this week. Watching football. How about you?
It was kind of the same thing, minus the basketball. Hmm. I watched no basketball at all. I watched a lot of football, including Florida State dismantling Florida, which really wasn't a game on Saturday night. It was boring, and I found myself flipping over to Notre Dame and Stanford more than once because the Florida State game was just no contest. But your Jets victorious? Giants, not so much.
We'll see next week. They clash.
I know. So
I think the Jets needed a little bit more. So if you think I'm just lay down this week, and then the Giants still have plenty of time to win the division. Even if they lose.
It's got 7-9 written all.
It might be 6-10. I'm not going to lie to you.
Over it, and I think that 6-10 for you. Even that sounds very, very exciting. But the NFL is going on. I know Dan McGinn, who's listening in and taking notes because he writes the Stooge Report for Brad every week.
Mm-hmm.
He's upset because the Patriots finally lost. But anyway,
oh, boo-hoo, please. I also took a bad loss yesterday. We played our back to being annual, hopefully, flag football game. We used to play tackle until a couple years ago, and then we took 2 years off, and we brought it back yesterday. We had 7-on-6, so we had a lot of guys out there. The weather was perfect. Played some flag. My team took a sad loss, but we were undermanned a little bit. But it was a lot of fun. I am very, very sore today, though. My legs are hurting.
And it used to be, of course, you could play tackle and then go out for a few beers and wake up the next day and play basketball and work out or do whatever. Now it's like, wait, I played flag football and I'm going to be sore until Thursday.
And the funny thing is, it's going to just be, I guess, the running and stopping and cutting, right? I mean, that's going to be it because it's just right in my like quads and hamstrings. Everything else feels okay. But anyway. Also, though, very exciting, on Saturday night, Kev, I saw Creed, and I loved it.
They had the one hit with My Sacrifice back in the day, and you were on their bandwagon with Nickelback.
I am so already tired of the Creed jokes. Like, you know, unimaginative schmucks on my Facebook page when I...
Wait a second. I've made one joke.
I mean, all together. Like, you plus them. I'm just, like, kind of done with it.
Don't spoil the movie for me because I do plan on seeing it. It's one of the few movies I really do get excited about. But does it get a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Thumbs solidly up.
Really?
And I will say that the Oscar buzz for Sly is well deserved.
I read that as I saw a story in the New York Post about that.
He was tremendous.
I'm down with that.
Tremendous.
What is the you were a loyal fan of the Rocky series?
Yeah, so the first one I saw in the theater was 5 back in 1990.
Just to show how young you are.
Yep, caught up with the rest right around that time. Have seen them many, 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 many times. When Rocky Balboa came out, I was there like within a couple days. And I like that movie a lot. And this one I would put, and we have a column up ranking the Rocky movies on PlaceMedition.com. It was a staff piece. I ranked them as follows. I had Rocky 3 was first, and then Rocky 1, then Rocky 4, then Rocky Balboa, then Rocky 2, and then Rocky 5. I would comfortably put Creed in between 4 and Balboa. And I would say maybe with future watchings, it would be in my top 3.
Wow. So 3 ahead of 1.
No, 1 ahead of 3. Oh, yes, 3 ahead of 1, yep.
Interesting. I always had my list 3 or 1, 3, Balboa, 4, 2, 5. So almost the same. 1 and 3 flip-flop.
The 3, I like 3 a lot because it's right on the line of like the campiness of later with the legit movie feel of the early ones. So it's right in the middle, you know. It's like a hybrid. Like 1 and 2, they have their moments, but those are really gritty, like legit, you know, Academy Award level stuff, right? Especially Rocky 1. 3, you get a little bit of that, and then you get a little bit of the hokiness of 4 and 5 kind of blended in, and that's why I like it so much, because it's not overly dramatic, but it's not overly, like, to me, 4 is a lot of fun, but it, you know, it's just crazy, you know.
four is rotten. But it's so hokey
that
it bumped it up a notch.
Right.
It jumps ahead of 2.
So that's why I like 3 a lot. And Mr. T is tremendous. To me, he's the best. I mean, Creed is good, but Apollo Creed. But T is like the best pure heel of the series. You get the Hogan cameo. Then you get, you know, the beach running and all that stuff with Creed and Rocky. So there is at least one very cool, and not a spoiler in any way, one very cool nugget thrown in to Creed for like real like big Rocky fans.
Yeah. Is it peppered with is it exceptionally violent or filled with filthy language?
No.
All right, cuz I was thinking of taking my wife to it and
oh no, she'll be fine. I don't think there was really any badly. I wish I could think of maybe one here or there. And the boxing fights are not, they're really well done. Probably, you know, up there with like the original fight with Creed as far as.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Like I would not take my wife to, as great as a movie it was, Raging Bull.
Right. No, you're fine. You'd be fine. It's a really
just
good story.
Too much violence, yeah. Too much bad
has she
language.
Seen
it's
the
not,
Rocky
it's
movies?
Not her
like,
thing.
Does she understand?
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. She wants to go see this one with me.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Okay.
And it's good. Even better if she knows like the deal because there's a lot of cool tie-ins and callbacks.
Oh, yeah. I think she knows. Well, I've made her watch the original Rocky like 8,600 times, including maybe two or three nights ago. We watched it on Netflix. Well, I watched it on Netflix and it was on while she was sitting there.
Right.
So that's great. I'm glad you got to see it. And that's something that's been on my mind because I really want to go.
Yep. High recommendation.
Normally, I just can't. Like, I'm so bored with movies nowadays. Everything just seems like crap.
I mean, this is only the second one I've seen this year, movie. So this is, but it was one I was going to see no matter what. So.
I can't remember what year it was, but one of those years where the worst 10 movies came out. And I had the misfortune of seeing like 7 or 8 of them in the theater.
Ugh.
And it just, I picked, it was probably in the late 80s. So I think I was like 18, 19 years old. And it just, one stinker after another, I couldn't avoid it. And then the end of the year list comes out. And it's like, oh my God, I've seen just about all of these. I need to step up my movie game. But this was before the internet, you know, so you were kind of really just word of mouth or, hey, I saw the preview on TV. I saw the trailer on TV. It looks good.
Yeah, there's Entourage is the only other movie I saw this year. So, but I am planning on seeing Star Wars. I probably will not see it within the first couple weeks because I am not waiting in line or battling crowds. I'm a Star Wars fan, but I'm not like a diehard fanboy by any level. So I don't need to see it within like minutes, you know.
I'm the same way.
So I'm thinking maybe like early 2016, I'll probably track out to see that one. But it is one I do want to see.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of watching things, I've stepped up my network game recently. I checked out Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're going to talk a little bit about the next pay-per-view extravaganza that they have because we won't be together before it airs.
Right.
But I got the network as a Christmas gift last year, and I've enjoyed it. But I didn't feel like up until this point I had gotten my money's worth. So I was like, let me just start watching it so I can feel like, okay, the gift was really worth it. You know, but I watched WrestleMania and I've seen 2 or 3 pay-per-views.
Right.
So, yeah, I've gotten my money's worth, you know, as far as that goes. But I watched Survivor Series and I turned it on because I was out. I came home. I turned on and I saw it from Steen Ambrose, middle of the match.
Mm-hmm.
So all the way to the end of that match. It was great. Terrific match. Exactly what I would expect from those two guys. Then the card took a turn for me, and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I had started my day by watching the 25-year history of The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
So that I was so hyped for seeing The Undertaker. I didn't make it. I had to shut it off. 5-on-5 match. New Day. Super popular. They're in the position to where they want the fans to boo them, but yet all they are is popular.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that, and they leave. Now, they had already introduced who were the five fellas that they wrestled? The former Skip Sheffield, the two Mexicanis,
I don't know which you reference to, but the Usos the Lucha Dragons. Yep.
No, the Lucha Dragons.
I'm busting up.
And
the Usos.
The Mexican dudes and the Usos. I like the Lucha Dragons. I love their entrance. That's when it ends. And the Usos, fine. No problems there. And what's Skip Sheffield's new name?
Ryback.
Him too. They left these 4 or 5 guys standing in the ring forever during this entrance. And there's Sheamus and the English fella.
Barrett.
Just yucking it up, right? Bell rings. They have their match. Then New Day leaves after Barrett had gotten eliminated because one of them got eliminated, so the other one left. And that left Sheamus by himself. Now, you would think 3-on-1, quick roll up 1, 2, 3. It's 3-on-1 odds. There's no way it can win. This thing dragged on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm throwing my hat. Like, what are they doing? Then, okay, so it's finally over. Merciful, but nobody looks good in this. Like, it doesn't help anybody. And then they go to the video package and they show the girls. Now, I'd heard a lot about this and I was excited. So I was like, oh, man, this is going to be like, man, it's going to be like a real tough street fighty kind of match with these girls. Great pull apart, great contract signing, flipping the tables. They cut out the part about Reed, which is fine with me, but it was still very personal. Personal issue. That's what draws, right? That's what draws money. That's what make people care. So they introduce Paige first. Fine, no problem. Here comes the champion. And she walks out with that smirky face of hers, and she saunters down to the ring, and she climbs up on the apron, and she slides in underneath the bottom rope backwards, the reverse Melina, like not a care in the world. Like,
right.
You didn't
doing
just
cartwheels.
Oh, look at the freaking package that's playing on the giant Titantron above your head while you're standing at Gorilla. How do you not know that? How do you not tailor that match in such a way that makes it so there's not such a disconnect? That's my problem with the WWE. There is such a disconnect.
Well, they went, the problem is too, and actually I covered this on the site in my Thoughts I Think column, double down or stop doing this shit. Like, if you know, I gave them, as awful as it was what they did, I gave them credit for at least like trying again, you know, I'm like doing something a little ballsy for once. And what do? Within like 4 days, they bury it. It's out of the package. And I think that's why they didn't book the match that way. I really do. Was that they were trying to forget all that crap that they did.
Then why have the video package?
Because they're stupid.
That's okay. So that's the disconnect. The disconnect between Department A and Department B. And they don't have inner office envelopes. They don't have courier service. They don't have email, text messaging, phones. There's no data plan set up. There's no communication between Department A and Department B. And that's the reason why no one is over. In a nutshell, it really is. And you're exactly right. They had something. They stumbled on some heat. They stumbled on an issue, a personal issue, and said, whoa, wait a second. We might get bad press out of this. Somebody might criticize us
for
making
gut bad press and criticize. I don't think they realize ahead of time.
Who? Who gave them bad press?
Oh, everywhere. I mean, Flair ripped them on his podcast, and then
who
like,
cares?
Yeah, but still, I mean, you know, fans are in, and viewers are going to side with Ric Flair over them at this point, just because they have like no positive goodwill banked. And they, I mean, I didn't see anyone that like said they liked what happened. I mean, the fans, critics, you know, Meltzer, like everyone. I didn't see anyone that enjoyed what went down. You know what I mean?
And again, I guess it's society today. We've just gotten to the point, we were talking about this the other day, not on this show, believe it or not. And it was political correctness running amok is basically going to strip everything from us. There was an article that said that 16 Candles is sexist and racist and an awful movie and no one should ever watch it again. And they're exactly right. It is. But it's a parody. It's not real.
Right.
Anyway.
What did you think, though, beyond the PC thing and everything? Like, was that necessary in any way?
No. No. Necessary? No, nothing is necessary. What's necessary? What's necessary is getting people to pay attention. Getting people to, oh no, Ric Flair said something bad about it on his podcast. Oh my goodness. Heavens to Betsy. How can we sleep at night? That's what this business was founded on.
Mm-hmm.
It's personal issues. And they've just, I understand why they're so sensitive to everything, because everybody is so sensitive to everything.
I mean, and that's why, like I said, I gave them some kudos for, even though as misguided and, you know, wrong as it was, at least they were showing some balls for once, something, you know, anything. And then they backed off immediately. So I don't know. I don't know if they even know where they're going. Now, the newest report is that Vince doesn't give a shit about the ratings because monetarily they're doing fine. So the fact that they got like the lowest rating in 9 years or whatever since 97, like a 2.7 or whatever they got last week. Mm-hmm. They're basically like, well, whatever. Like USA's paying us. The network's doing fine. We're making money from all these other streams. Like, what do we care, basically? So, I mean, I guess which is true in a way, but not really.
And I think that there's just that, and I'm not saying, okay, Vince is right, Vince is wrong. It's just that there's a disconnect, and that disconnect, I don't remember it ever being there. The disconnect between we did things that we shouldn't have done, so therefore we're going to pull the plug on the package, wait, or we're going to tailor the match a certain way, wait, we can't, what? We're airing the package. You girls had better call an audible, you know? I don't know. It's not the end of the world for me, and it's not the end of the world as far as Vince McMahon is concerned.
No, you know why it doesn't matter? Because none of it matters anymore. And this is the problem. They've gotten to this point somewhere along the way where like 87% of the stuff that happens on their shows and pay-per-views doesn't really matter in any way. Like, most of what happens tonight on Raw really is not going to matter in 2 or 3 weeks. In any way, things that happened a month ago aren't going to really matter. The only thing that'll matter is who wins the Royal Rumble and who's wrestling at WrestleMania. And like, other than that, there's maybe like 4 other things throughout the year that really matter.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's just where they've gotten to this point. Like, it just, I don't know what got them here, when it happened. It's a erosion of what wrestling was, and good for them. They're making tons of money, so whatever. But at some point, like, it's clear that, F off the ratings, and I'm sure a big part of it is DVR and Hulu. You know, I'm sure all that factors in. I'm sure maybe that 2.7 or 2.0, whatever the heck it is really a lot more based on who follows and watches other means.
And I wonder how much the – because I know Fox is not going to do, like, overnights anymore because they said it'll matter. It's impossible to follow now. And, you know, the business of television certainly is changing. More and more people are cutting the cord because of us exactly right here.
But there's an erosion of viewers one way or the other. So, and there's an erosion of viewers that need to see the show with some sort of immediacy.
Yeah.
So you can say DVR, but how many football games, Kev, do you DVR?
Never.
Right? So to me, that speaks to, I don't need to know what happened right now. I can watch it Tuesday afternoon. You know, I can see it then, and I don't care if it gets spoiled for me, whatever.
Okay. So then let's take that a step further, and I'm starting to see a different side of this argument, playing that it doesn't matter card. Did they get the benefit, in spite of the fact that they turned around and they shied away from it, did they get the benefit? Like, will people remember what was said on Raw as being tasteless and yucky, and then the fact to the girl's benefit?
No.
Meaning, but did it – so it didn't help the girls what aired on Raw?
Nope. I think it made people, like, feel bad for them.
Squeamish and squishy and uncomfortable.
That they made Charlotte stand there. And the fact that it was wasted on a match that wasn't played up as a blood feud in any way.
Yeah.
That could have been – wasn't needed. You know, this wasn't – say what you want and how awful the stuff with Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio was. Remember Eddie's in Hell and all that stuff? At least that led to a WrestleMania match and Rey Mysterio winning the world title. And it was, I mean, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it. And they didn't. And I don't think it helped anyone. And I think it will be remembered because it stood out as so different. But obviously, in the end, it didn't lead anywhere. So it's going to stick out as a big waste. Oh, and remember the time that asshole Vince McMahon had Charlotte stand out there and cry over her brother who OD'd and have Paige call him a loser? You know what I mean? Like, that's what's going to be remembered. Like, remember this hot angle, you know?
Do you think that that's what the, I don't know. I wonder how much the fan of today, and I don't know. I wonder how much the fan of today thinks about the WWE as much as we do.
Yeah, I think it's there. I mean, just go on the internet. Like, there are people who say every week they're not going to watch Raw anymore, and then they're on the same blogs and message boards talking about Raw. I mean, it's ingrained in wrestling fans. But I think more and more, some of that is starting to become true. that they're not watching it, or that they don't care enough. They'll wait to see the Hulu version, or they'll wait to see who says what's good. Hey, what did I miss? Hey, you can skip everything but this match. And then they'll go watch that match. So you can argue that the in-ring level of wrestling is the greatest it's ever been in WWE. I mean, you could say that, right? Maybe since, other than, 2000?
Oh, and as far as the television product, the athletes and the athleticism.
Right, the matches.
Go watch some of the World Championship Wrestling shows that are up now on the network.
Right, the matches are trash.
Oh my gosh.
Awful. But they're compelling and they feel important and they're showcasing guys.
No. I mean the World Championship, the Saturday night at 6:05.
The matches suck.
The squash matches are rotten.
Yeah.
The jobbers look like I forgot how bad they looked. Like awful. They came off the streets.
But they tell solid stories week to week.
Hey you. You've been panhandling out here for an hour. You want to come in and get warm? Here, put this suit on. Go stand over there. When you hear the sound, ding, 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 pretend like you're going to fight the guy. Okay. Ding, ding, ding. What am I doing in here? That's what it looks like. But we liked it. Damn it, we liked it. I didn't care for the matches. I was like, please get the matches over because I like the angles. I like the interviews.
Sells. I mean, that's what sells. And what's happening, what we're seeing is great wrestling, isn't the selling point because there's so much of it. I can see a 4-star match almost weekly on some, whether it's ROH, WWE. So to me, Cesaro and, John Cena may have an awesome match on Raw, but I'm probably going to see one just as good on the pay-per-view or just as good at a Ring of Honor or maybe even TNA or my local indie may put on something, if you're one of the Twitterati out there that, gush over these local indies like they're, WrestleMania 17, then you're going to see that. So it's like you can see it anywhere. And without that compelling story, it's like, well, I don't need to see Raw because I'll see this 5-star match somewhere else or they'll do a rematch next week or they'll fight 15 more times. And
all right. So if the matches don't mean anything and that I agree with, but we will watch for the emotional moments and the interviews. But when there's a disconnect between talk and action, and I think some people see through that whole thing of when you have a conversation with somebody, you don't talk and then they talk and, there's no crosstalk. You know what I mean? It just feels kind of staged. I think people see through that. But when you stumble upon something real like they did with Charlotte and what's her face, then it was like, hey, man, that was pretty good. I don't know. I think they were off script there. Ooh, it seemed like they really got mad.
It was good other than the fact of the content. But let me ask you this. Do you remember before Daniel Bryan and Triple H and the Authority angle, what was the best stretch? And I know you didn't watch a lot, so it's more of a I'm setting you up to fail. But the best, most real feeling feud that had great, that had it all, that made you want to see every piece of the feud. It's not as far back as you may think.
Well, if I went back to Matt Hardy and Edge, that felt really real.
Right.
Because it was really real, and they cut the legs off from under it. I'm working forwards now. Eddie and Brock Lesnar had some elements of real. Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair was real.
Come a little further. Oh, actually, same year.
Go.
Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. And there was not realism behind it.
I remember it now.
So Matt and Edge, they had a real issue, right? So of course that's going to feel real. Shawn and Flair, based in reality, Ric Flair's retiring. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, a completely fabricated, built-up story that slowly evolved over multiple months. They had multiple matches, but it never felt burnt out. And there's no coincidence that 2008 was probably the last year that WWE TV was really, really good.
Yeah.
And they didn't need to do anything crazy. They were a little edgy. They pushed the envelope a bit.
Wasn't it built around the elimination at the Royal Rumble?
No, that was, you're thinking, all right, so you're thinking of their feud when you were around. I'm talking 2008. So the whole angle was that Jericho blamed Michaels for costing Flair's career, and he was kind of he was still a face, but kind of being smarmy, and he said that Michaels faked being hurt because then Michaels fought. Actually, it was Batista that was mad that Michaels retired Flair, and then Michaels beat Batista in a match where he faked being hurt, and Jericho called him out on it, and it built from there. That's what started the whole Jericho wearing a suit, being Nick Bockwinkel angle.
Got it.
So anyway, my point being, you can tell a story, you can have great action and be compelling in the most basic of ways. Like, it's not a dead art form. It can be done. That's not even that long ago.
Right.
But it meant something. And they have the guys that could do it. You have guys that connect. You have your Kevin Owens. You have your Cesaro. You know, whoever. Even Reigns at times. The Shield. But just nothing feels like it matters. And, like, I feel like that was around the last time, until Daniel Bryan, where you felt like shit mattered, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't even fathom missing a Raw in 1998. And the wrestling was putrid. But whatever. It mattered. You know, I didn't want to record it and watch it the next day. I wanted to see it then. And I feel like you can, and this whole, just to wrap up my whole point, you can talk about DVR and Hulu and everything else. If your product meant something in the moment, people would watch it because it's a sport at the end of the day and people are going to want to see what's going on.
If it mattered, if it meant something, if it was good.
Yes.
I watch every episode of The Blacklist. I try to catch them live. And when I don't, I DVR them and I watch them as soon as I can. Because to me, it's compelling television.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see what Red Reddington is going to do next. How they're going to get out of this and which bad guy they're going to take down in some cool way. That to me is great. There's other shows like that that you follow. There's shows that McGinn follows, that all of us follow, that we all like. Or it's a sporting event that we must see. You're big into Providence basketball, you know? You would probably do whatever it took to watch a game. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't, you might protect yourself from the, you know, from the results, if possible, right? I know our pal Todd Sinclair does everything he can to not find out who won the Boston Bruins game because he is such a fan. If he can't watch it live. So that would be it. That would be the dream. I think they have all the elements. They have more quality athletes than ever before. And they have more combined years of industry experience in charge than ever before. And guys that are relevant. I mean, when I started there, you know, a lot of the agents didn't necessarily relate to the athlete of the mid and late 90s, but they had like 40, 50 years each in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so they knew how to act like a professional, even though it was hard for them to have a conversation, you know, with say an Edge or Christian or the Hardys, you know what I mean? Cause they just didn't relate. But now you've got guys that are relevant and guys that are peers that are also, I mean, you've got Triple H who's in charge. He's wrestled most of the guys that are on top in that company. He can speak to personal experience, or he's handpicked them to be in the spots that they're in. And maybe that disconnect between Department A and Department B is the disconnect that apparently exists between Vince and Triple H. Because if the rumors are true, they bicker like cats and dogs when it comes to creative direction on the show. And I heard that from an inside source who knows what's going on. So maybe that's where it begins and ends. I don't know. I just don't know.
I kind of almost in a way want to compare the degenerative state that they've kind of been in to the NFL in some ways. So the NFL rules and officiating is a mess, right? And
yes,
it's been this slow build over the last 10 to 15 years where, okay, this isn't working, add a rule in. Okay, this isn't working, add a rule. And now we're here, and it's like no one knows what's what. Like, we can't even figure out what a catch is, what a pass interference is. Like, because we keep putting rules on top of rules on top of rules on top of rules instead of wiping the slate clean and just rewriting the rule book. Like, I think they should sit down this offseason, throw out the rules, and say, we are going to rewrite the game of football.
Mm-hmm.
And make this as simple as possible, because all they keep doing is tacking crap on top of crap, and it's getting so convoluted that it's starting to turn people off. And you laugh because they're still making so much money, but you know what? Wrestling was making a lot of money too at one point, and UFC was making, you know, everything fades when you start to drift over what made you popular. So football.
Well, okay. Now I'll stop you right there. Yeah. because revenues for the league have never been higher. The television contract money is enormous. And Vince himself said that television ratings and all that, we're not concerned about it because we're making more money than ever before. So
live gates, you know, live gates start to hit. You get more and more people. You laughed at it, right? I'm not watching Raw. I'm not going to, you know, and they come back and they come back. But eventually, maybe they don't. And maybe they do cancel the network. I'm hearing more and more people and I'm seeing more and more people. I couldn't get through that football game because of the, you know, that stupid pass interference call or that awful penalty or, you know, it's not, you know, you can't hit anyone anymore without it being a flag. And what's a catch? You know, Odell Beckham makes this amazing play. He comes down or it looks like, and then, you know, they find the rule it's not a catch. So it's like more and more people are starting to get fed up a little bit. And eventually fantasy is going to get oversaturated. And eventually, I mean, gambling's never going away, but fantasy is going to get oversaturated at some point. And things are going to start to tick down, and you can't just keep ignoring it. Like, the NFL right now is kind of turning a blind eye to all this stuff because they're doing so well. But that hubris is what's brought down many of other very popular things. And my comparison is that WWE at some point went down this road of throwing patchwork on top of patchwork, bring back the old star, add another hour of TV, do this, do that. And instead of just stopping, looking at what made you popular in the first place, wipe the slate clean, and rebuild, they just keep doubling down on the stupidity. Cesaro's hot this week. All right, let's push him. Okay, he has three wins. I'm going to have him lose. Now we're going to get Owens over. So now Cesaro puts over Owens, and Cesaro loses for a month. And we're in this repetitive state of nothing mattering. And at some point, they need to stop and say, we need to rebuild things. We need to build up some stars. And that's just my comparison point, that both companies on different tracks, on different timelines, got away from what made them so popular, turned a blind eye to what their fans were saying, and kept throwing, you know, crap on top of crap to fix all the holes that were bursting open. And before you know it, you can't patch anymore. And I feel like NFL officiating is getting there. They can't keep just throwing spackle on it because these rule books are getting out of control. And WWE, to me, you can't just keep throwing spackle week after week, hoping to catch lightning in a bottle for a couple weeks.
Well, I think in the NFL's case, the refs are the scapegoat, right? The league can say, we'll make everybody happy. We'll get rid of the referees, or we'll get all new referees. Yay, everybody will cheer. Does that change what is really kind of hurting the game, especially the live event setting? And, you know, that it is such an oversaturated product on television with four games a week. And, you know, four nights of games a week.
The other thing, too, I mean, the comparison between WWE programming and them keep bulking up these games. You know, the Thursday night game hurts the quality.
Sure.
SmackDown hurt the quality. You know, it's like,
who's the scapegoat? If the refs are the scapegoat in the NFL, because if they fix the referees, then everybody will be happy again, or a lot of people will be happy again.
So
it won't fix the core problem.
The core problem is Roger Goodell not wanting to.
Thank you.
So that's the core problem, just like Vince McMahon is becoming the core problem with WWE.
So they need to get rid of the leadership.
Or the leadership needs to fix themselves. Goodell needs to say, you know what? We're in trouble. I see. They need someone who's a visionary enough to say, I'm heading down this road.
Okay, now I'll take it a step further because I've been thinking a lot about college football, which I'm a huge fan, and coaches being let go. Like, they wanted to get rid of Les Miles at LSU because he lost three games this year. And they got rid of Mark Richt at Georgia, who was the offensive coordinator at Florida State when I was there. They got rid of Mark Richt because he hasn't won a national title, and they lost three games this year. And at some point, you know, you've got to have realistic expectations, and that these are kids, and it's an ever-changing thing, and every 4 years you're getting a whole new crop of kids. And, you know, by the fifth year, every single person that was on the team 5 years ago is gone. And now we have a chance to rebuild and restart. But the Georgia athletic director said he drove home from the game Saturday after they beat Georgia Tech and realized he knew he needed to make a change. He knew he needed to make a change. To do what? To become a better team? To win national titles? Because it wasn't because of Mark Richt that you didn't win. So, okay. So if you get rid of Vince McMahon, if you get rid of Roger Goodell, what are you going to replace him with? If you get rid of your coach who you don't like, who are you going to replace him with? And who's to say that the leadership that replaces what's in existence now is going to be better than what you have? If you go by the the thought process that Goodell is the problem and he needs to change. Vince is the problem and he needs to change. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but I'm saying, if not them, then who?
The people that enable them to do what they're doing. So corporate sponsors, yes men, Kevin Dunn, you know, it's like the guys
the owners hire Goodell. Vince is the owner of the fiefdom, so he controls everything. Even though it's a public company, but they own all of the voting stock, so it's not like there would be, you know, uproar from the masses that own the stock. So what's the call? And who's taking over? Who's the leadership? Is it going to be Triple H and Stephanie? Are they the ones? Are they going to step in and fill that void when Vince leaves? And then apparently they're going to sweep out all of Vince's guys and do who and put whom in there?
Right.
What are they going to do? That's a lot. It's a lot of change and a lot of upheaval that they want to do. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you. Like I said, I think that it may be time for a step back, for a different direction, for something new, something varied.
And even if you don't want to go that far, there are tweaks you can do and still kind of wipe the slate clean a little bit in your overall theory and presentation without having a major overhaul. You know, you don't have to clear out your roster. You don't need to go to small buildings. You don't need to. I mean, yes, the show could definitely use a new look, but that doesn't matter as much.
I think the look is great. I think the look is fine. It's not the look. The look is, to me, it's better than ever. It booms on my 55-inch TV I've got. It looks incredible. The athletes the wrestling has never been better. These guys are amazing. And the women, oh my gosh, what they can do in the ring is second to none. They're the best athletes. They look fantastic. They're not all gassed up. They look healthy, right? They look like people that you could have a normal conversation with, which may be part of the problem. I don't know.
Is that the issue?
It could be. Some of them are not as larger than life than they used to be. There's not a
social
the
media
Hogan
play
or,
on that too, you think?
Yeah, I think there's part of that. I think everybody is a step down in stardom. And again, you can be a reality TV star, quote unquote, by just being on a reality TV show. It's a little fame is has always been fleeting, but now it's easier to come by than ever before.
But not even that. I mean, from like you say, how they're more accessible or they seem like, you know, you could have a conversation with them. Well, yeah. I mean, I see all of Dolph Ziggler's life on Twitter.
Well, and I say it from a reality-based standpoint. I don't think I could have a conversation with the Ultimate Warrior or with Macho Man Randy Savage.
Well, because
right?
they seem larger it than life. Because
they did seem larger than life. I, personally, Kevin Kelly, the interviewer, could never have a conversation with The Rock. Right? I would try to interview him, and he would insult me. That was the extent of our relationships. Now I think that, yeah, maybe some of that is needed, but I don't think it's been better than it is now in terms of what these athletes are able to do and how they're presented.
I mean, case in point right now, Raw, right? So, I mean, whatever, spoiler alert, if you're listening to this somehow,
plug your ears and your nose.
Dolph Ziggler just defeated Tyler Breeze on the first match in the first hour of Raw at 8:30.
Okay.
This is a feud that's been building over the last few weeks. Breeze beat him at Survivor Series. Breeze is a guy you're trying to establish as a up-and-comer, and now he loses a match clean to Dolph Ziggler on Raw. That's going to be forgotten in a few weeks. Like, why? Why did he need to, like, if you're really saying you want to, you know, have Dolph win the feud or get to that point, like, why not save it? Build it a little bit more. Survivor Series is last Sunday. And they just did a throw, and it means nothing. They'll fight in a tag match on SmackDown, and they'll lose again. And they'll fight a TLC, and it won't, you know, just none of it matters week to week. It's almost like every week is its own. You know, instead of an episodic TV show, it's moved to like an old sitcom where every week was a new adventure. It's almost like that's what it's becoming. And Lana's back on TV, even though everyone said she wouldn't be. So I don't know. It just feels like
we called that right, didn't we?
Right. You did. I'll give you full credit on that.
Thank you.
Although, yeah, you're not completely right. You said they'd be divorced and they're actually engaged. So that's kind of the opposite. You said they'd be broken up in real life.
If she valued her career, she would be. But the news being what it is, apparently she's you know, trying to shoot her way out of town, which is fine. Hey, whatever. That's cool, man. But yeah, there are a few rules that exist in that world, and that's one of them. So you don't go above your pay grade if you're a guy.
Mm. So I wanted to talk one other topic here. NXT, kind of in the same vein, right? Because a lot of people look at that as kind of the future.
Yeah.
Triple H is said to have a lot, you know, a lot of say, a lot of power. It's his baby. A lot of fans seem to think maybe someday that's what WWE could be like under Triple H. Right now, it's a great developmental system. They're bringing up stars. They bring in guys from the indies, kind of teach them the style, let them go. Is NXT actually, the way it's done now, counterproductive to what they need the developmental territory to be? Is it becoming so big and almost like its own independent group that, sure, guys are getting the experience, but the pressure is starting to build and the expectations from fans of this to be like an A-plus show? And you see it. You see fans say, oh, this week's NXT sucked. Oh, I can't believe they're doing this with Eva Marie. It's like, well, she's down there to try and get better and learn. And that's the whole point of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, to see if they can fix people. Like, don't worry about the wins and losses. Don't worry about who's, you know, like, don't get mad if Bailey loses to so-and-so or Bal. Yeah. You know, like, it's not meant to be, it wasn't meant to be a big touring brand and a mega draw. They were cool to put it on the network for people to enjoy because it is really good because of the quality of guys down there. But I feel like the expectations of fans are starting to get a little too high. And if you compare it to like baseball, where you have a loaded farm system of prospects and you start calling them up and, you know, the product starts to dip a little bit, are you getting mad if you're going to, you know, Paw Sox games and they're losing because they called up three of the guys and you'd rather see them in Pawtucket so you could go watch? It's just, it's a weird sense of entitlement I'm starting to feel.
But it would be the same thing. Okay, here's what they're doing, though. Let's say the Pawtucket Red Sox had a bunch of their kids called up, right? And they're now playing in Boston. And instead of bringing up kids from AA to fill some of the void and to maybe put some butts in the seats, the Paw Sox are gone out and hired some big leaguers to come in that can hit home runs and will sell some tickets. Because that's what they've done. This week on TV, you got Samoa Joe and Tommaso Ciampa.
Right. And I think overall,
two guys that don't need development. You know what I mean? They're there to right. help sell the brand. And I think to provide cover for a lot of these young guys and girls as they do learn on their way up. I like it. I like the philosophy. I like the, you've got to have somebody on top. You have to have main eventers, and there has to be people to work in the opening match as well. Now, the opening match has to be the opening match, and the main event has to be the main event. So you can't have – it's difficult for Samoa Joe to work. I don't think you're going to see Samoa Joe work with Greenhorn Green on TV and lose or to put the kid through a good match.
But would it matter if he did, though? Because to me, the goal, but think, why? Because now they're worried about it going from being a developmental territory to also going back to the AAA thing, right? So you're the manager of this AAA team, and you have the young guy that needs innings, right?
Who's going to get the at-bats?
Exactly. Right. Is it the guy coming down here just to help out and learn, clinging to the end of his career? Or is it the young guy that needs the reps at third base? So to me, is it counterproductive to put Samoa Joe in the main events against, you know, Ciampa? Or would it be more productive to split them up and use them to help work with your other guys? And that's my whole point with Eva Marie. Everyone was so worried that she's going to beat Bailey for the championship. No, the goal is let Bailey, who's a superb worker, the top ace of the women's division, work with someone like Eva to get her, you know, try and improve her game. Like,
exactly.
We've seen it so many times where green wrestlers or young people, you know, learn on the fly because they're like Batista in Evolution is a perfect example. That guy, look how awful he was when he started. And after just absorbing and teaming with Ric Flair and working with Triple H and, you know, working with Mick Foley and The Rock and being in that position, absorbed, and all of a sudden became a star. That's what they're trying to do. So it's, there's a disconnect. And my fear is that Triple H seems kind of aware, and I don't know if it's a ruse or what, but kind of aware of the fan sentiment towards NXT, and I think a little bit of his ego is like thrilled that NXT is more beloved than WWE at times. But again, the whole goal should be to prepare themselves to fill the obvious gaps they have in the main roster, and that should be the number one selling point, not putting on an awesome card for NXT TakeOver in London. So,
or if I'm Triple H, okay, knowing that I'm the head coach in waiting, I'm the general manager in waiting for Raw. Am I going to let Vince or the current regime have my stars, or am I going to slow play them, hold them back, use Samoa Joe and Tommaso Ciampa and the others to have great matches, to sell the brand, to help grow the brand, but at the same time, kind of slow roll out some of my future guys so when I take over in 2 years, 3 years, whatever, they'll be ready and I could pop them out on a moment's notice. I've got them like a deck of cards and I'm ready to just flip it out. Ace, 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 because I know these guys are going to be good. I think there might be some of that too.
Sure.
If I'm Triple H, I know I'm taking over. I'm not going to turn them over because apparently when they do, they become different, right? Hey, so-and-so is this in NXT. Well, we see him as this. So this is what he's going to be. Wait, what? He's this in NXT and the people like him. Ah, you don't get it. What? So.
Right. I think just my overall point is they need to decide what's NXT's sole purpose.
What is NXT?
Is it to be a thriving, you know, draw that they need to worry about having A-plus cards and selling out Barclays Center and all that? That's fine if they want to do it. Hey, more power to them. Or is their primary focus on preparing people to move up eventually, whether it's now or in 5 years?
And let's remember, too, there's some selling of the network going on with them. You know, like I don't think they can just roll out, you know, like interleague scrimmages on the network. They've got to make some compelling episodic television that some people are going to like in order to make sure that the subscription base that follows NXT exclusively on the network continues to do so and hopefully grows.
Well, that's my point, though. So do they want it to be a sell? Like, my point is you can't do both.
Yes, I mean, you can.
Well, sure, you can. But you still need to focus one over the other, right? Because at some point, one is going to have to take priority. At some point. At some point, it's going to come to the point where you need to decide, look, I know NXT is a big selling point and we're drawing, but is that due to Samoa Joe and so-and-so and so-and-so? Or, you know, would this time be better served on getting these younger, really green people, Josh or Tough Enough or people like that, the exposure and the time? And I mean, maybe not. Maybe they can do both without a problem. But I don't know, that Eva Marie Bailey thing just kind of stuck out in my mind as like a prime example of what the goal should be. Like, they shouldn't worry about if Bailey loses, because who cares, in theory, who the champion of NXT is? The whole goal is to prep them to be ready, not to draw the tickets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, if Eva Marie had won that match, I think, like, the internet would have exploded. You know what I mean? Like, I saw people really worried about it and complaining about it and everything else because they just assumed she was probably going to win. But, like, why does it matter? Like, because Bailey loses on NXT, that means she's done forever?
Okay. So, Tyler Breeze just wrestled.
Yeah.
Dolph Ziggler.
Yep.
Would 6 months ago, if Tyler Breeze would have beaten Dolph Ziggler, would we have said the exact same thing that you just said about Bailey and Ava Marie? The internet would have exploded if Dolph Ziggler would have lost.
Well, Dolph Ziggler wouldn't be in. I'm talking from a developmental standpoint, though, not the main roster.
And I'm talking about from a television standpoint, right? And internet fan reaction, because I think it's too blurred, and you're kind of making it very cut and dried when it is blurred.
The problem is they're building up a loyalty to the NXT brand because the show's been so good.
Yes.
That it's starting
to
get away.
So therefore, anybody that comes in is an interloper.
Right.
And we want them out.
Or that it's just starting to get away from maybe the main goal, which is to develop young people and get them ready. Like,
we heard a lot of those things within Ring of Honor when Cornette took over and it changed and it wasn't the same old Ring of Honor.
But not now, even that. Like, I'm not
now. It's not the same old Ring of Honor that Cornette had. It's completely
Ring of Honor's goal was always the same. like Ring of Honor's goal was always to sell tickets, sell DVDs, and be a viable promotion. What I'm saying is NXT meant to be a viable wrestling promotion, or is it supposed to be a learning ground for young wrestlers? That's my point.
Like, and I think the answer, if I put my Triple H hat on for a second, it can be both. I think there might be that cop out answer.
Yeah.
Because there are tons. There's what, 80 people that are under contract? And you don't see most of them on television. You know, they brought in soccer players and volleyball players and Russian gymnasts and.
Sure. And yeah, because they get the performance center and everything else.
Czechoslovakian pole vaulters.
Yep.
What? Well, you cut out for me for a second there. What's going on?
Well, no, they get the performance center, which is where they train. And I guess NXT is the middle ground. And then they go to the main roster. But
yeah.
And again, I don't know if any of this is a major concern now, but the whole theme of the show so far has been, you know, planning accurately to ensure future success. So
this is what corporations do, by the way.
Yes.
When you get to December.
Smart ones, anyway.
Smart ones. You start to go, well, you've already had these meetings. You're going, okay, what did we do last year? And what in the hell are we going to do next year? So not only can we do as well as we did last year, God, we don't want to slip back. But my God, how do we do better next year? How do we get more out of less? How do we maximize, strengths and minimize weaknesses? What are all the things that we need to do in 2016 to make us better? So that's why we're having this conversation now. We're sitting at the board table, the board of directors, and we're chewing on a pen and we're looking pensively across and we're saying, how is it? What is it that NXT's function is here in all of this? A viable brand or a training ground for the Raw and SmackDown stars of the future? Right?
Yep.
I feel it. I feel you. I think that if you had your crystal ball and you had to predict where things would be in 2 years, okay, we don't want to say, is Vince still in charge, right? But are things still the same if Vince is still in charge, or will he allow change to happen?
I mean, nothing tells me he would, unless someone or something steps up and makes him. That's the only time he ever really has.
Vince wanted to. Vince was desperate for answers in 1997, and I know because I was there. I wasn't in the meeting, but I heard all about it. Russo spoke up at the meeting, showed Raw magazine, said this is what we should be doing. He was the only one with balls that stood up, and this is in a meeting with Vince and Pat and Briscoe, or I don't think Briscoe was there, but JR, Bruce, Cornette, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure ideas were thrown around, but Vince was one that said, how about this is a new direction? How about this is something different? This is what we should be doing. And Vince McMahon went for it. So what's changed since 1997? A lot. How old were you in 1997, JR?
I would have turned 17 in December of that year.
Okay. I'm 17-year-old Justin Rosero. I think everything could be different.
Give me more Sonny.
Oh, Sonny. But who's to say? I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised that Vince McMahon said, okay, Vince Russo, I'll listen to you.
Right.
I really don't know you that well.
But, I mean, there has to be some truth to the fact that it seems like Vince has really lost his fastball, right? I mean, everyone gets old and everyone loses it. No matter how great you were or how shrewd you were at times, it's bound to happen. I mean, he has to be burnt out. He has to be. How can you not? I don't care how much of a machine you are or whatever. He has to be both physically and mentally burned out to do what he's done since, like, 1982 or whatever the hell. And yeah. Hustling even more before that, you know? I mean, at some point, you have to wear down. And you have to step back. And I think he's tried. I think he's understood that he can't be, you know, he stepped back off TV, which is step number one, right? He said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to be on TV anymore. So that's happened. He's given Triple H a little bit more control. So, I mean, maybe he's starting to see it.
Well, this has been a slow progression because one of the reasons that I was hired in 1996 was because Vince wanted to step away from the microphone. He didn't want to announce anymore. And they put me out there and USA said, hey, we want Vince.
Right.
And so Vince McMahon was back on TV.
And I think it's always been that way. I think he always wanted to wrestle and be on TV, but I think there came a certain point in the 2000s that he didn't want to be anymore. And that was what you always heard, but that USA and the ratings were always highest when the McMahons were on. And it became a self-fulfilling prophecy from there.
Right. Well, I think we fixed a lot of things. I think we can adjourn now. We can have lunch brought in, and we can feel good about ourselves that we accomplished so much and we've made concrete plans for a broad and robust 2016. Right? No, nothing. But if you're in a meeting, that's what you'll tell yourself. And that's what you'll tell everybody in the post-meeting email that will go out to everyone about how we have some exciting plans for broad and robust growth in 2016. Okay. So what else do we need to talk about the WWE? We want to do a quick preview of TLC, right?
Well, as of right now, there's only a couple of matches announced. So I guess we'll just really quickly talk Sheamus. Do you think he makes it out of December as WWE champion?
I say yes, and I think he loses it at the Royal Rumble.
I say no. I think they need to get the belt on Reigns. He's fighting Sheamus in a TLC match at the pay-per-view. You can't have him lose again. You've already built him as such a choker. They should have just had him win a Survivor Series, but they keep delaying the inevitable, and it's just going to make more and more people lose faith in him. It's going to diminish the pop even more. He needs to just win now and be done with it. The Sheamus experiment was fine, whatever, but if anything, you know, I saw like our buddy Jimmy Stewart from the Sports Hub out here, a big wrestling fan, and he's been on a show or two of ours before in the past too, just tweeted out, look, the Monday Night Football game sucks tonight. Browns Ravens with, you know, McCown versus Schaub. It's like nothing going on. Why not take a chance and try and pop a big rating where you have some eyeballs on Raw maybe and have Reigns win the belt tonight? Do a big thing for it. Do something to stand out. So I don't see Sheamus. I mean, he's obviously not going to Mania as champion. I think Reigns has to. And I think you need as much time as you can to evaluate Reigns. I think if I'm them, I have Reigns win, Brock win the Rumble, and then you decide that night or that week, all right, is Reigns over a champion or do we abort? And then Brock is your guy. Either Reigns goes over him to rebuild himself or Brock takes the title off him to end the experiment if it's failing. But you need the time to find out. If you wait till January, you don't have enough time really because that period is our hottest period anyway. Like, do it now to see during the downtime.
Well, we'll see what happens. I like the idea. I think they have to get it's Brock and Reigns. Mania. When they pull the trigger with that, we'll wait and see. Sheamus is the transitional guy, and that was one of the reasons I kind of threw my hat at Survivor Series when they just had him just be in that 3-on-1 situation for way too long. It didn't help him and didn't help anybody. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. That's TLC that comes up. We're going to review that. We wanted to talk about that a little bit tonight because,
by the way, PTBN will be in the house. 10 or 12 of us, a pretty big crew going to Boston for that show. So,
well, a good time will be had by all.
Mm-hmm.
And then in our next episode, we'll do a rundown of Final Battle.
Yes.
We'll get some thoughts on that because that's our big event coming up on the 18th. And then are we going to do a show that I'll get to preview? I got to do something special for the Dome.
Oh yeah, like yeah. I think we. Get
I'm really
month,
excited so. About that for January 4th for Wrestle Kingdom 10.
Yeah,
and the New Japan Purecast guys, I really appreciate their work, and I've been kind of following them, and I listen to them. They're helping. They really are. They're good critics in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I like them. So anyway, we'll have some more talk about that, and we'll get Daniels on the line here in a few seconds, and we'll talk about that, and that'll be fun. So we'll take a break. We'll get CD on the horn. He's over in Japan right now doing his thing. So enjoy some Brother Kite as we go to break. We'll come back with more of the Kevin Kelly Show here on Place to Be Nation's Place to Be Nation and our website home, placetobenation.com.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it. By the light of the moon, then she read on the path to the edge of the
All right, so we'll get Christopher Daniels on the line here shortly. It'll be very exciting to talk to him, as always. But good stuff is always going on the PlaceToBeNation.com website. So I want everybody to listen carefully as Justin Rosero walks you through something very important that all of you need to hear.
Sure, but it's also a lot of fun. You should check it out. So as you know, we love tournaments over at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Oh, my gosh.
We've had some really fun ones. We had the 90s music. We had the wrestling themes, we have the greatest TV characters, and it's the holiday season, Kev. So this is Place to Be Nation's Holiday Tournament Spectacular. We've thrown a whole bunch of shit into a bucket, shaken it up, and thrown it to tournament form. 128 of your favorite holiday traditions, movies, TV shows, foods, experiences, music, all the top 128 items. We ranked them as a staff, members of the staff, anyway, ranked them. And build brackets, and round one is up in its entirety. There are four posts, but if you click, if you just go to the first page, you'll see it. And then there's a little tag, holiday tournament, that'll bring you all four of them. You can do that, and I can actually give you right here the actual URL if you want to type it in. PlaceToBeNation.com/category/life /holiday-tournament. So you can find all four posts for round one there. All polls are open for round one until midweek, and then we'll kick off round two. A lot of fun things to vote for, such as Frosty the Snowman, Black Friday Shopping, Joy to the World, the Hanukkah song, Adam Sandler, Doctor Who's Christmas
Special,
the Shaka
Khan, I love her,
Home Alone, Santa Claus, Lethal Weapon, Polar Express, Dominic, like all this stuff is jumbled up into one big tournament. So be sure to head over and cast your vote before it's too late for round one, and be sure to keep coming back all throughout December. And we're looking to wrap this thing up on right before Christmas. So it'll be a hectic month here with this tournament, but be sure to come in and vote as much as you can. Also, as I mentioned, it is the holiday season, meaning you're doing a lot of gift giving, a lot of purchasing online, I'm sure, via Amazon.com. Before you go to Amazon, though, visit PlaceToBeNation.com. Scroll down. There's a big banner on the right-hand side, or if you're on your mobile device, it's at the very bottom of the screen. Amazon banner. You click that. It brings you right to Amazon, and you need to do absolutely nothing else. You just go and then do all your shopping as you would normally do, and we get a little bit of kickback here at PlaceToBeNation.com, help us keep up and running. So again, nothing else you need to do besides just click that one button. Go to PlaceToBeNation.com first, click the banner, and then do all your shopping as you normally would. So we really appreciate anyone who stops in and does that for us.
So we need that Amazon. Everybody needs to hit that Amazon link, because we've maxed out the company credit card, because we've just we're going global now. We're over in Japan with our pal Christopher Daniels. Almighty Christopher Daniels is currently competing with his tag team partner Frankie Kazarian. Yes, they're the Addiction, and they're in World Tag League over in New Japan, and they're conquering worlds and kicking ass in several languages. And it's awesome to have him here on the Kevin Kelly Show. My friend CD, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Greetings and salutations to the Place to Be Nation audience. And thanks for having me today, man. I appreciate it.
One of my buddies who is not a tried and true wrestling fan, he got into wrestling over the last couple of years because I'm announcing Ring of Honor. He sent me an email today and he said, there were these two fellows on TV and they were yelling at you and they said that they were going to Japan. Why were they so angry at you? I laughed. I said, well, because they blame me for all of their troubles. You know, what can I say? I don't have any stroke.
you're the voice of the company, Kevin. We can't yell at anyone else. There's no one to yell at. So you're the easy target. So
damn it.
Yeah, I know.
Damn it. Well, you are in Japan and you're doing quite well. So World Tag League is a round robin tournament that encompasses most of December. And you've traversed across Japan up and down and I'm sure back around again. Tell me about your experience so far. How's it been? How's it going? You guys are performing quite well, I understand.
It's doing very well so far. We have 4 points in the round robin stage. We have two more matches left. So right now there are two teams that are ahead of us by 2 points. But if we can win the final two matches of our block, we'll have 8 points. And I feel that we will win the block outright. So we have a match with Toru Yano and Mr. Sakuraba in a couple days. And then the big one for me, I think, is going to be against Yuji Nagata and Manabu Nakanishi. That's going to be the real test, I think. And that's our last match. So if we can win those two matches, I believe our hands will be raised as they have been most of this tour so far.
You'll just, you'll just say thank you to Mr. Nagata, whatever you'd like to do, please. Thank you. Yes, it'll be okay.
Right,
no
right,
problems,
right.
No worries, no issues. Nakanishi, same thing. Who looks like he looks like the thing, you know?
Exactly. It's so very rare that I'm going to get in the ring with someone who has more experience than me, and Yuji Nagata definitely is that. So I'm certainly looking forward to it.
You did not get into professional wrestling through the quote unquote traditional route, correct? I mean, if the amateur ranks and the mats of high school and the AAUs and that type of thing, or from the gridiron, whatever, you didn't necessarily get into wrestling. That how did you find your path into this crazy business?
Well, the funny thing was, I was always a fan, so I it's hard to say that it's not the traditional way, because I feel like so many of the best wrestlers grew up as fans of it. But in terms of like my sports life, my experience in any sort of sports, it wasn't amateur wrestling. It wasn't football. I played soccer in high school and I was fair to middling at best. I did 1 year of amateur wrestling, but certainly nothing that you would write home about. I actually went to high school and then college for an acting career. I have a theater degree, and my plan after college was to go and trod the boards, as it were. So I moved to Chicago with the woman who eventually became my wife, but at that point we were just dating. And I said in passing, as we were trying to both break into the theater scene in the Chicago area, I said to her, "Oh, you know, if acting doesn't work out, I can always be a professional wrestler." Ha ha ha. Completely tongue in cheek. And one of the things about my wife is that when she gets a notion in her head, it's hard for her to shake it. So she found a wrestling school in the Chicago area, which was Windy City Pro Wrestling. She made an appointment for me. And so I went in and met the man, Sam DeCero, who was one of the Max brothers in the AWA, who ran the school. And she says that I came out of the meeting with a glazed look in my eyes, as if I was hypnotized. And a couple months later, I started the training. And a couple months after that, I had my first match. That was April of 1993.
And so when we say a non-traditional, when we also say, when Steve Corino, who's now suspended from commentary, when he says that you started like back in the 60s, that's a falsehood, correct?
Completely false. Completely false. I was around, but I wasn't really allowed in the ring.
Got it.
You know, I was helping build the ring. I was taking pictures. I was selling tickets. I was security. I was doing the young boy jobs. So yeah, but yeah, Luthez and I, we were fast friends. I don't know. I'm sure Steve has said something to that effect on television in the past.
I think he said you were on the undercard of Rogers and Pat O'Connor when I said that you got started in Chicago, and it's like, he was on the undercard of that match in 63. I'm like, I don't think so.
The rumor was that I was Dr. X that night, but I was actually in Mazatlan, Mexico, on the undercard for Blue Demon versus El Pantero. So I think completely false. Steve needs to check his facts. It's a common mistake.
He's factually challenged, but anyway, sometimes. you've gotten pretty far from being a fair to middling soccer player, and you know, tried 1 year of amateur wrestling. Where did the athleticism come from? How were you able to harness this? Did this? Were you more of a physical theater? Did you, you know, were you a stage performer? Were you doing like you know, kind of knock knock jokes there on the side? What kind of stuff were you doing?
Like in college, I my degree in theater, like, it meant, you know, basically just stage acting. So I was doing things like Romeo and Juliet, and I did Waiting for Godot, Samuel Beckett's play. And after I graduated, I was living in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I did some stuff at the Fayetteville Regional Theater. I did Dracula and 42nd Street. Even though I was a terrible tap dancer, I was one of the chorus guys in the back. And so, I mean, once I got into wrestling, though, physically speaking, like, I knew that I was going to have to, you know, start visiting a gym. So, I mean, obviously, even before I started training, I started hitting the gym, and not necessarily in a cosmetic sense, but in a functional sense. Like, I certainly thought, oh, well, I'm going to have to be much more in shape in terms of how long I can wrestle. So cardio for me was something big, even early on. And then I don't know. I think part of the reason that physically I took to it so well was because as a kid growing up watching it, I had a frame of reference when, for example, they said, okay, well, this is a body slam. This is how we do a body slam. And so I saw, oh, well, I know what a body slam looks like. So it was easy for me to sort of grasp the how-to of the physicality of professional wrestling. And then it was just a matter of, I lived very close to the school, so I was there 4 days a week without fail, to the point where I became one of the trainers, one of the guys with the keys to the school. And so very often, like on weekends, I was the only guy there, or I was opening up the school and grappling and training with guys that were there on weekends. And a lot of it was literally just physical trial and error. Just going in and getting in with a guy and trying the stuff that I had either seen before or the stuff that we had trained previously in the classes, and literally learning by doing.
And who was your frame of reference from a professional standpoint? The from watching it on TV? Were you an AWA guy? Did you glean more towards the Crockett promotion, WWF? What were you, a little of everything?
Well, yes and no. Originally, it was the Crockett Promotions because I grew up in North Carolina. So the Mid-Atlantic territory was my first actual experience. But also remember, I was a teenager when cable became a big thing. And so all of a sudden, I'm 14, 15 years old, and I have access to the USA Network, and there's Tuesday Night Titans. I have access to ESPN, and there's World Class, there's AWA, and so and Mid-South. And so my original experiences were Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors and the Four Horsemen and the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express and James E. Cornette, our pal from all the way back. So those were my originals, but soon it broadened, that scope broadened for me because of cable. So I got to see the Von Erichs. I got to see the Midnight Rockers. I got to see Terry Taylor in the UWF in Mid-South. It certainly opened my eyes once cable came around.
Big shout out to our pal, Terry Taylor, our mutual friend. We love
him. A huge shout out to, and someone who has probably been more influential in my career than any one person. So a lot of my success I owe to Terry.
It was always great working with him. I got more heat when I was in the WWF by hanging out with Terry than anybody else. In fact, he told me I was going to get heat by being friends with him, but I was a defiant, petulant child there and insisted on running with that rough crowd, that hooligan Terry Taylor. So
he's often very self-deprecating, but he also has said that being his pal would be more detrimental than not. And I don't I still subscribe to the fact that he's done more for me than against me. So I'll hold that opinion.
We would talk when you guys were together in TNA, we would talk on the phone and he was telling me what a great time he was having there. And there were troubles. There were issues, of course, you know, but he was like, you know, I can always count on, you know, like if I look over and if I need something, you know, I got Christopher Daniels right there. And it's like it just gives me a good feeling of satisfaction knowing somebody like him is there. And then, you know, he'd go on to list three or four other guys that were in that same boat, you know, Kurt Angle, this one, that one. Your time in TNA, and I don't want to dwell on this, but I do want to touch on it because it provided you with a great vehicle and great opportunity to be seen on a national stage. But at the same time, it always kind of felt to me like it was half in, half out, one step left, right. You know, it was an odd tap dance like you did in 42nd Street.
Yeah, definitely.
Was it professionally fulfilling in one hand? Because I know you probably made decent bucks. But at the same time, it was frustrating. How would you encapsulate your TNA time?
I think everything you just said pretty much hits the nail on the head. Professionally speaking, it was the best decision I could make for my family. And in terms of getting my face to the professional wrestling audience, it certainly did so much more than anything else that I had done at that point. But at the same time, it felt like sometimes it was a strange tap dance, like one step forward, two steps back. And because there was such a revolving door of creative ideas and talent, I felt like every time I made some sort of progress in a way, shape, or form, it was negated by the fact that those people left and there were new people. And I always felt like I was proving myself to new people pretty frequently. And I've said in the past, and I'm not going to mention names, but there are some guys that I felt never got behind me to the extent that I wished that they did. And there are some people whose names I will mention, people like Eric Bischoff, who did sort of put their trust in me, and I felt had their trust rewarded by having successful storylines being put on. So, I mean, you know,
housekeeping.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Sorry about that.
We clean your room now?
maybe. They're all looking for me. They're all looking for me. Please be quiet. You speak too loud. The whole
please.
Floor.
Come on, bus now. Wait.
No. So, I cannot, for all the negative, whatever negative I can say about TNA, at the same time, there's so much more positive that I like to focus on. The friendships that I made, the rivalries that I had, the matches that I had, Anything I ever did with AJ Styles there, anything I ever did with Samoa Joe there, the fact that my best friend in the world, Frankie Kazarian, he and I came up there together, and the team that we have now was born there. And if it wasn't for us being there and sort of being frustrated with the way the lay of the land at that point, we might not have come together as a team. And so I'm very thankful for those instances. And those are just the easy names. Like, I could go on and on and on about the matches and, you know, the times that I had tagging with Elix Skipper and the matches I had against AMW, the people that I wrestled when I had the X Division championship, like all of that, every bit of that was a positive. And, you know, so, and to me, it's so much better to focus on that positive than to sort of shake your fist at the negative. There's no change. You do that and there's no change. It's not going to get any better by shaking your fist at it. So
my son, my oldest son, who's now 20, we didn't really expose him to a lot of wrestling when he was growing up by choice, just because it was the Attitude Era and it was, I didn't feel like having that conversation with him, you know.
Sure.
I don't want to have to explain what Mark Henry touched, you know.
yeah.
So we did watch a little bit of wrestling, and we were at a convention. My pal Tommy Fierro ran a thing in New Jersey, and he came with me, and he threw in some tickets in a silent auction thing. Sure enough, he wins. What does he win? He wins the autographed TNA action figures of the team of Christopher Daniels and Elix Skipper, which
tremendous.
To this day he still has in his room, still in
tremendous.
The case. And,
one of my first action figures.
Right, and that's something that, like, nobody can ever – they could say whatever they want to say about TNA, and I've taken my shots at it, you know, as somebody who sits on top from the outside and has all the answers.
Sure.
I've hurled plenty of slings and arrows, but – you got an action figure. You're on TV every week. You were able to take care of your family. It sounds like mission accomplished to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you can focus on the negative or you can look at the positive. And I've done that through my whole career. Like, anytime I'm ever down about, oh man, I wish I was somewhere else or higher up or whatever, I have to take a step back and go, there are literally 1,000 people who are fighting to get where I'm at this moment. And you talk about the action figure. There's those moments in your career where you're like, oh, wow, that's an action figure of me. Oh, cool. That's a trading card of me. Oh, wow, I'm on a video game, you know, and success and sales of that action figure, that trading card, that video game, put that off to the side and just say, hey, you're on a video game. How many wrestlers in the world get a chance to say that? And so, yeah, I mean, those are all sort of the perks of all the hard work that you put in. Like, all of a sudden your son is playing you on the Wii, and you're like, oh, well, life can't be too bad, can it?
No. And, okay. So you're in Japan now, and 14 hours time difference means it's 11:21 AM. And,
right.
and where are you?
We are in Fukuoka right now. We had our first of two shows at the Hakata Star Lanes last night. We're going to go again today. And we're like you said earlier, we're deep in the midst of the tag league, and we've had four matches and two left for the league itself. We don't actually have another league match for another like 4 days, I believe. So, but because Frankie and I, we're sort of in the position where there are many factions here. There's obviously Bullet Club. There's also Chaos, which is the group that Okada and Nakamura are a part of. There's the Great Bash Heels, which Makabe is the head of. Frankie and I belong to none of those. And so we're not in six-man tags. We're not doing singles matches. Every day, it's Frankie and myself against the world. And so they've put many different teams against us. So, like, for example, last night we wrestled Hiroshi Tanahashi and Juice Robinson in a tag match and had a pleasant time was had by all except, well, Juice, because we ended up pinning him, but everyone else had a good time.
Well, the young man's got a bright future, that's for sure.
He certainly does. He certainly does. It's incredible. I had never really gotten an opportunity to see his work, and watching the stuff that he's done on this tour is remarkable. And I'm thrilled to know that he found a spot after, you know, his experiences in the States sort of fizzled out. To know that he got the opportunity to come here and is now firmly entrenched in the machine here. It's a great thing for him.
it'll be, you know, you'll have a Hall of Fame career. And I want to ask you about the mythical Ring of Honor Hall of Fame in a couple minutes. You'll have had a Hall of Fame career. If it ended today, you'd have had a Hall of Fame career without the WWE. There's very few in the modern class that will be able to say that. And it'll be like, you know, if it ended today for AJ Styles, he could say it. You could say it. There's maybe a couple others, but few and far between. What does that say about Christopher Daniels that you've had this great career and you've been able to do it all without, you know, the sphere of influence of Stamford, Connecticut behind you?
Well, like I said, I've been very fortunate. I feel like I came along at a very good time in one sense, in the sense that, like, when there was no WCW and no ECW and all there was WWF, suddenly two things happened. A, in February of 2002, this little company called Ring of Honor decided to start doing their deal. And then a couple months later, down in Nashville, another little company called TNA decided to do their little deal. And I just so happened to be on the radar for both companies. And slowly but surely, with no idea at the time that this was going to happen, those two companies became a power in professional wrestling. And like you said, take whatever shots you want about TNA, but for a good long while, a nationally televised, you know, more than a million people have seen me wrestle because of TNA. And the same thing for Ring of Honor. Like, Ring of Honor over the years, its ups, its downs, the last couple of years with their reach with the Sinclair Broadcasting Network and the fact that they're now on broadcast pay-per-view, you know, millions of fans have seen me through that. And so all of that has to do with those two companies and not to do with, you know, my short flirtations with WWE aside in the late 90s and early 2000s. You know, all the success and the fact that if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, if you know the name Christopher Daniels, it's because of one of those two companies or both.
It is amazing. And obviously one of the reasons why you've had such success is your longevity, and you're far from hanging on, right? You're at the top of your game. The wrestling matches that you've had in Ring of Honor in calendar year 2015, and I'm not damning you with faint praise at all, are some of the best I've ever seen. Outstanding work. I've said on TV in a number of occasions that you have made Father Time your bitch, and I'd like to know how have you done it? And what's your recipe, your secret of success, the magic formula, the magic elixir? What pill are you taking? What are you doing? And can you bottle it and sell it to the rest of us?
I wish I could. I wish I could somehow monetize that feeling. But a lot of it certainly is the company I keep. I'm very fortunate to not just have Frankie as my friend, but also the people in my locker room, especially right now, the Ring of Honor locker room, the guys that I look across and watch. Basically, it's sheer ego. It's sheer ego for me to be able to say, all right, well, I have to go in there and wrestle this gentleman who may be 5 years younger, maybe 10 years younger, maybe more. But I have to go in there and I have to perform at that level or better. And so it's a internal push for me to try and be able to continue to wrestle at that level. And, you know, and I see Frankie Kazarian, who's 7 years my younger, and to see what he can do and see how hard he pushes himself in a gym, in a wrestling ring, and to know that I do not want to be the weak link in our team. And so I have to continuously push myself to be as good as Frankie or better. And it literally is that mental game. And I think that's one of the things that I've focused on, not just in my wrestling character, but in my life, is the idea that I have to work smart. Like, the one thing that I will always have in my favor is the years of experience that I've accumulated. And so if I'm not using that, then I'm really the idiot. And I don't think my mother raised an idiot. So I'm trying to do the smart thing and keep my career going. Anything I can do to elongate it, I'm going to do. And anything I can do to continue to stay relevant and stay at the top and stay ahead of the curve in terms of the talent of Ring of Honor and New Japan and professional wrestling as a whole. That's my recipe right there.
I won't ask you to single anybody out in Ring of Honor, but I know you've had a variety of combatants, a variety of opponent since you've come back. And it's been, what, a year and a half since you returned? It's the fastest.
Yes.
That's kind of what I was going to highlight. This year and a half has just gone by at the blink of an eye. It's absolutely amazing to me that it was June of 2014 in Nashville that you guys came back to Ring of Honor.
Right.
It's amazing. And now, whether it's been matches that you've had with the Briscoes, that was a match that stands out to me at Survival of the Fittest 2014, which was the semi-main event. That was amazing. But everything seems to have really clicked for you guys in Ring of Honor. Little change of attitude, San Antonio, getting the World Tag Team titles. And since then, man, it's been all systems go, I think, for the Addiction.
Absolutely. And I have no problem singling out a certain number of teams. I feel like Frankie and I, working against teams like Red Dragon, working against teams like the Young Bucks, those two specifically, I felt like it puts us in such an easy comfort zone. I feel like our best work as a team is when we're the antagonists. And I love that feeling. I feel like we barely just scratched the surface of what we could do with the Bucks. You know, we were right in the midst of something with them, I think, when we ended up losing the championships. And I don't think that particular issue is settled. And I think that there's more to come and certainly a possibility, especially now that the Young Bucks have become, have signed with Ring of Honor. I feel like there's an opportunity there for more Young Bucks Addiction. And the same with Red Dragon. I mean, I feel like once we won the belts from Red Dragon, they sort of focused on singles championships. But at the same time, you know that any time that Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish walk to the ring together, you're in for a great match. And that's just two of the many tag teams that Ring of Honor can put on the card at any time. If there's a deeper tag team roster in any company at this moment, please tell me who it is, because I don't know.
Yeah, and I always, like, I say those things because my job is hype and hyperbole, but I say it at the same time, and I'm trying to think as I'm reading reading this note that I've written for myself. Well, where would there be more tag teams and deeper tag teams and better tag teams? Maybe New Japan, but wait, some of those guys are here in Ring of Honor, so we got them.
Exactly.
So we win. Yay us.
Yeah. It's funny. This recent Survival of the Fittest that just happened, Frankie and myself competed in two four-way matches, and it wasn't until after the matches were announced that I realized that we had taken basically four outstanding tag teams and split them up to put into these two four-way matches. So we had the Briscoes, the All Night Express, War Machine, and us, the Addiction. And none of those teams are the champions at this point. And still top-level tag teams. So you're not mentioning the Kingdom at that point. You're not mentioning the Young Bucks at that point. You know what I mean? ACH and Matt Sydal, you're not mentioning those guys. So there's seven teams right there that I've mentioned. Seven teams, the champions involved included in those, but seven tag teams. How many times have there been seven tag teams vying for the same championships?
I can't think about it. I can't think of another time. Steve and I have talked about it before. We've talked about it on this show, the mythical Ring of Honor Hall of Fame, which is one of my most favorite subjects. And one day, of course, we'll build the building and it'll be ornate and beautiful. But we have to have inductees. So I get a ballot because I'm the voice of Ring of Honor, and I fill out my name at the top, name Kevin Kelly, and then I have a list of blank lines, and I have to pick three. So I go, okay, in no particular order, I go Kerry Silken, CM Punk, and then I'm torn. Do I go Christopher Daniels or Samoa Joe? And I go, Christopher Daniels, because I put Joe in on the second one just because I want to spread it out a little bit. But it, really, it's gotcha. A flip of a coin. So I got to put Kerry Silkett in because without him, none of us are here.
Right.
And
right,
I got to put Punk in just because I feel like I need to. But I could. But then I take that and I go, wait, let me take him and let me take Punk out. Let me put Joe in and then let me put Daniels in. And then I start to really vacillate back and forth. I can only put three in. Who do I put in? CD, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
And you haven't even mentioned Brian Danielson at this point.
No,
and that would have.
I haven't even. Oh, yeah, because that's who I go to. That's my when I'm torn and I'm talking with people on Twitter and we're starting to bounce names back and forth in great debate. And, you know, the Briscoes come up and Brian Danielson comes up. Now I'm really torn.
Sure. Well, I mean,
so there's three. Look, I had names, and now I got three, and now I got eight names. What do I do?
I know. It's tough. I would double vote. I would double vote. Put two ballots in, if you can. If anybody can get away with it, it's you. But honestly, I mean, it's been mentioned a couple times, and if/when an actual Ring of Honor Hall of Fame becomes a reality. The fact that people mention my name in the same sentence as people like Joe and people like Brian and Jay Briscoe and Punk, in terms of what our contribution to this company, it certainly is an honor for that. And I'm just so fortunate to have had this opportunity. I mean, it's hard to think about, it's not hard to think about, but I mean, I've had four different debuts with this company just because of circumstance and, you know, the way that professional wrestling works. I've debuted for this company four times. And this last time, there was no guarantee that I would have been I felt like I could have been welcome. But, you know, when a company is successful, and I just said this about New Japan a couple of days ago, when a company is successful, there's such an onrush of people that want to be there. And when my situation with TNA ended, I always felt like I had a great rapport with Ring of Honor as a company, but that didn't mean that there was an actual spot available to me. And the fact that A, there was a spot, and B, the spot was available for myself and Frankie as the act, as the unit, you know, the stars aligned. And so, you know, once Best in the World 2014 came around, at that point, it became our job to make sure that keeping the addiction around was good business sense. And so, like, we went out there and we tried to hit a home run every time someone pitched the ball at us. And I feel like we've done a pretty decent job so far. But I mean, yeah, like whenever I wasn't in Ring of Honor, I never in my head said, I can always go back to Ring of Honor. That would be arrogant. And as arrogant as I may play on television, I realize how fortunate I am that the powers that be in Ring of Honor feel that there's a spot for me here.
Because it weighed heavily on you when the financial considerations that TNA were offering, it weighed heavily
Absolutely.
On you because you never wanted to have to make that sacrifice. You never wanted to have to, but you had to. And none of us were like, oh, what an ingrate. What a jerk taking money.
Right.
How dare you?
I honestly,
we were all like, hell yeah. Go
right.
clean up.
I've never put my notice in at Ring of Honor. Whenever I had to leave, I left begrudgingly. I never wanted to leave Ring of Honor. And I'm sure you were in the room. We were in the Hammerstein Ballroom, and I remember a discussion where I said I would never leave this company on my own volition. And every chance I've ever gotten with Ring of Honor, I hold it so deep in my heart that this company has given me the chances that it's given me. And I would never, ever turn my back on it or speak ill of it or take it for granted. That's not what wrestling has done for me, and that's not what Ring of Honor has done for me, where I would ever treat it as an afterthought or you know, oh, of course they would do that for me. That's nonsense. And so, yeah, I every day I think about it. Every day I think about it.
It's incredible when I think about our journey, because when I sent you a note and said, hey, could you be on the show, and you'd made time for me, and it was great, thankful. Then I was like, all right, I know I met CD the first time in Stamford at the warehouse, the Funkin' Dojo, and
right.
he had hair, and I had more hair than I do now. and now I'm talking to you on a computer while you're in Japan and I'm in Pennsylvania, and yeah. It's all these years later, and we're pals, and we work together, and we've got cool jobs, and I think everything turned out okay.
I think we're doing okay. There's more in the plus column than the negative column, I feel.
Yeah. It's great stuff. And I've got to wrap this up because, you know, listen, Brad's credit card here for the Skype. When he gets bill, the owner of this website, he's going to flip his lid, but that'll be good.
Hey,
better to ask forgiveness than permission.
Before we cut this off, can you and I both give a quick shout out to Jim Kettner, who also a huge influence on, I think, both of us. I not to speak for you, Kevin, but like, if it wasn't for Jim Kettner, a lot of the opportunities that came from the Northeast Independents wouldn't have been afforded to me. And I feel like the many times you and I shared a locker room for Jim Kettner's companies were wildly, wildly beneficial for us.
Absolutely, because I had a sphere of influence. I had learned what I learned when I came up in the Indies in Florida, but it was sort of like just blind blur. Like, I didn't really learn much. And then blind blur in WWF, like, oh my God, I'm here and I'm drowning. I don't know what I'm doing. But then when I got with Kettner and I was able to kind of slow down and digest the business a little bit, now I started to understand how things became marketable, how you make a star,
right,
how you build matchups, how you create rivalries, and how this will do this slowly, and then we'll speed this up, and then we'll make this happen. And everything just seems to work great. But without him, I wouldn't be where I am today, because I probably would have just, you know, exploded and blown up, spontaneous
right.
combustion. But
right.
Kettner taught me a lot, and I know he gave you, me, and a lot of others a great stage to perform on.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we're both already ECWA Hall of Famers.
Yes, we are.
And you're a 2-time Super 8 champion. And
yes.
I think one day we'll build, you know, maybe, just maybe, we can venture back down to Delaware and take Jim out for, you know, a nice time at the diner and have a little meal. So
I would happily do so. Happily.
That would be awesome. So the next time we will see you live and in person will be at Final Battle on Friday, December 18th, correct?
Correct. Correct.
That would be a good time. We'll announce what the match is coming up soon on ROHWrestling.com. But for now, you will go. You will conquer Japan. You will win the World Tag League. You will assert your dominance. You and Kazarian and the Addiction will you will show the world that you are the best tag team in the world, the best in the business, and the greatest
three
tag
syllables.
Team.
Well done, Kevin. Well
Thank
done.
You.
Well
yes.
Done.
But no, it just continued health, continued success, best of luck, and I will talk to you again soon. I can't thank you enough. Give some. How can people reach you? Because I know you love to be reached, and you love to be touched by people. So please, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is through my Twitter. It's at FAC Daniels. FAC stands for Fallen Angel Christopher. You would be surprised how many people don't understand that. And then through that, you can find out about my pro wrestling tees or my celebrity video messages or et cetera, et cetera. My website, www.fallenangelchristopherdaniels.com. I try to keep that updated with my schedule and my goings on. But one or the other, you can find out what's happening in the life of the old CD, through Twitter or my website. And then you can always watch me on Ring of Honor television, coming soon to Comet TV.
That's very exciting. And you being a comic book guy, I mean, again, we've got a sci-fi channel that we're on. So I think this is, you know, again, it's lock and key. It's perfect. It's peanut butter and jelly.
Exactly.
For you, for Frankie, for all of us. And we're all kind of spacey. So I think we'll fit in perfectly on Comet. But
exactly.
Man, I can't thank you enough for your time. I'll see you at Final Battle, and just travel safe, be well, and thanks again.
I will, man. Thank you so much for having me on, and to your audience, thank you for the support and for listening today. Each one of us in wrestling, we wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for the support of the fan base, and Ring of Honor has one of the strongest fan bases in the world, so thank you guys for all of that.
Well, great talking to Christopher Daniels, a great conversationalist, a great friend, a true ambassador of wrestling, a guy with all the answers. We should have him at our next board meeting. That's definitely what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. But until then, make sure you go visit placetobenation.com for all the coverage of TLC, everything happening around the world of professional wrestling and beyond. Expand your borders and expand your mind. Right, JR? And mm-hmm. Get out and check out the site for all its goodness. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks with something, and then 2 more weeks after that, something else. And we're coming up on what, our anniversary, 3 years will be the 22nd?
Early to mid-January, yep.
Early to mid-January, somewhere around then and there. That'll be our 3 years. Is it 3 years?
Yes, sir.
Good God almighty, 3 years. Who's said it would ever last this long? Okay,
definitely.
So that's it for this edition. We'll see you. You thought I would bail by March 1st, right?
Yes, it's been an amazing one.
All right, well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in once again to the Kevin Kelly Show here. Oh, thanks to Dan McGinn. Thanks to Justin Rosero, our producer. Thank you so much, guys, for everything that you do. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you on the road to Final Battle here on the Kevin Kelly Show and the Place to Be Nation and theplacetobenation.com.
Pick up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had the strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox.
Then people would be more inclined to buy the network and watch the shows.
I'd buy the network for a happy ending.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's back. All right, here we go. So I got to piss. Be right back.
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.